Well, the Stone Arch Bridge is open. We did. I know everybody's complaining about construction. They got it done early. The Stone Arch Bridge is open. They just opened it like an hour and a half ago, Dan. Aren't you excited? Is this great news? This is great news.
I mean, it's not bad news.
It's news.
It's a thing.
Channel
4's got somebody
over
there. Yeah, there you go.
Live coverage. You know, why not? It's not the bridge work that I think. Well, I love the Stone Arch Bridge.
Yeah, it's very nice.
When's the last time you walked over the Stone Arch Bridge?
20 years ago.
Because this comment from you sounded like what people say, like when a restaurant closes that they didn't really give a crap about, but they wanted to act fake concerned about it, you know?
Like, oh, that's too bad. I really like that place.
When's the last time you went?
You know, a couple, 5, 10 years ago.
Dan just achieved something that to me is unthinkable.
Yeah?
Unthinkable. I could not imagine doing what you just did.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it's given me the shakes just thinking about
sure.
it. Sure. You were on vacation.
Yeah. Did my, you know, annual kind of July, about a 5-day vacation I usually do. Maybe.
Any reason you took this particular time?
None we need to discuss.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you took you took 3 days off.
3 and then the weekend.
And the weekend.
So it was a 5-day stretch. And I did, over those 5 days, I did 2 things. Jack and squat. I mean, I did nothing over these 5 days. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't eat nothing. I mean, I did watch bad TV and, you know, broke out the telescope when the sky is allowed.
Right.
But I mean, it was the unplugged week of all unplugged weeks for me. Which doesn't ever mean in this job and just how I'm wired.
Because you did text me.
I did text you when the Senator Mitchell verdict happened. So I'm not completely out of it, right?
So you were...
But I realized, it wasn't until even Wednesday afternoon that I sort of looked at the rest of this week and went, there's nothing I have to do.
Hmm.
Like nothing. I want to see how long I can ride that wave. You know what I mean? Where if something comes up in the middle of the day, I need to run and go, okay, then I'll go do that. But I'm not going to plan anything. I'm not going to make any big projects. I'm not going to do, you know, I'm not going to use time off, especially in the middle of the summer like this, as, okay, now I got to go do all the things. No, I'm just going to do whatever I want, which is, if that includes like watching the Mythbusters marathon for most of a day or more than one day, then fine. Then I'm just going to do that. And it was glorious. I loved every second of it.
Can you unplug like Dan? 651-461-9226. And when you think about unplugging, like, what does that mean
yes.
to you?
How do people define that? Because I think the way you would define it is vastly different than how I do, which is, again, totally okay.
But yeah, there's no judgment. There's just curiosity.
There you go.
No judgment, curiosity, though. I'm curious how you guys define unplugging, because for me, unplugging means I don't have to walk into this building. That's it. That's the extent of my unplug.
But for you, if you're not going to be here to feel
it is difficult,
good and comfortable and whatever it is that you define, you need to be out doing things.
It is difficult for me to do nothing. It is something I'm thinking about more, though, because as our, you know, empty nester life is sort of right around the corner for us. And we've already, Alyssa and I, have had a number of weekend, anybody with kids, you know, like Saturday is, if your kids are in youth sports or dance or theater or music, Saturday is like, we got to go to this, we got to drive to that. For kids who are on higher levels in sports, or like Seth was in speech and debate, and so that's a full day, you're driving somewhere. It's a lot of that. And this summer, we've had our first taste of days where we got nothing. I think if you subscribe to my newsletter, which I send out on Fridays. There's a little section of my newsletter where I have a list of things you could do. And then I always put, here's what I'm going to do this week. And twice this summer, I've put down, I have no plans this weekend.
How hard was it for you to write that sentence?
Well, admitting it was difficult.
Sure.
Because you're like, well, that's not what I do. And then also looking at it, you're like, well, that ain't going to last because I'm going to fill the void.
Sure.
Now, Saturday night, we did stay home. I grilled some Thielen meats, grilled some sausages, and Seth and Alyssa and I sat by the fire in the backyard.
Perfect night for it.
That's all we did. And it was, and then we watched the Maple Grove fireworks. So does that count as unplugging? I would say yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Certainly for me.
I was going to say, especially relative to your everyday life. Yes, that absolutely
That's extreme
counts.
Unplugging. Yes. How do you define unplugging? 651-461-9226. What does it look like for you? 763-er. I can definitely unplug. I go for a run outside, preferably on trails. No headphones, no music. Just myself. I think that's right. I think the... Now, some people can need the music to unplug, right? To help them escape.
Or to distract them from the torture that is running.
But I find... I'm a little jealous of the running people. Every once in a while, when I think like, oh, maybe I want to do that.
No, I'm good, especially when you are out there in the winter and it's like 15 below and they're still out there doing it.
No way.
No jealousy. Sorry.
They all look so skinny, though, the runners. I'm like, maybe that's the secret. I do think there's something different to that experience when you have your ears open to the sounds
sure.
of nature. I feel that way when I bike, you know, same kind of bit.
It's, for me, when I go camping, it's similar kind of deal where you're just outside in the middle of not city sound, you know, that I'm so used to in my everyday life.
651-er, can I unplug? Ha, 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 ha. Absolutely, positively not possible in any way. But I am a small business owner.
Sure.
So there's always something to do there, no matter the day. That is the danger, right? So like in your experience with unplugging, it would be very tempting to tick off the to-do list. Because there's always stuff like, oh, I could organize this closet or I should, I don't know, there's an outlet in on Alyssa's side of the bathroom that is loose. And I said to her yesterday, I'm like, I got to fix that. Can you remind me to fix it? And I did not.
Mm.
But like now that's in my head. Like
sure.
Now tonight I'm going to have to do that. So I would find it difficult to really have the time be mine and not turn it over.
It, you know, it's obviously much easier for me being single and not having a family, right? I mean, the obligations that come with being married and being a parent, you know, that's a whole other level. So I don't have that. So
although right now, like I don't have that much.
No, but I mean, there's always something.
Yeah.
You know, that, and I just don't have anything on that particular kind of list, which I totally get. One of our YouTube folks, Jonathan, friend of the show, says unplugging means turned off the phone. I will turn off my phone when I hear that there's a nuclear explosion that's about to destroy me and everybody I know. Until then, you will turn off my phone over my cold dead body. I can't do that. It gives me the heebie-jeebies if I don't have that connection. And that's why, obviously, you know, like I said, when I texted you on Friday, it's because I have, you know, either the laptop's up with Twitter scrolling by me or I'm getting an alert on the phone. Or I can't put that away. That just isn't in the programming. Boy, I can sit around and do a whole lot of nothing.
It's interesting to think about. I think one of the things I think about with kids especially is like our kids need more time to do nothing, more time to be bored, more time to let your mind wander and try to think and not have just stuff in there all the time. It's interesting to think about. Let's break. When we come back, I want to talk about what city is your kryptonite. I had to go to Woodbury twice over the last year. I live in the opposite corner of the Twin Cities of Woodbury. It might be my kryptonite. What city is your city where you're like, ugh, not going there? 651-461-9226. We'll talk about it when we come back. Woodbury and Eagan. Those are my two kryptonite cities. I was thinking about this concept on Saturday as we loaded up Sam in the car and went to Woodbury because Sam's going to USC in a couple of weeks, and the Minnesota alums had like a send-off for incoming kids who are going off to the University of Southern California. But you have that, so like that's a significant thing, right? You're like, yep, I'm going to go to Woodbury, which like if I'm in downtown Minneapolis, going to Woodbury is no big deal. From Maple Grove on a Saturday.
Slightly bigger deal.
Yeah, so Alyssa and I are talking, like, how long do you think it takes to get there before you MapQuest? I'm like, I bet it's 45 minutes. MapQuest, what is this, 1997?
Kind of wondering.
So I got so I went to ask
Jeeves. Print it out on the inkjet?
I like MapQuest better than Google. It sounds better.
Okay.
I MapQuested it.
Sure.
I don't know what happened there. That's so silly. Some of those things that are just stuck in your head from, I don't know. So there was the group, the meeting, the sign up. You had the RSVP on MySpace, and then you go to MapQuest to get the information. So you're like 45 minutes. That is.
Was there an AOL Messenger group that formed out of? It's
too long. It was alt.usc.alum.
Oh, so it's Usenet. Okay.
Yeah, it's Usenet. That's my kryptonite for me. 45 minutes. And you go to Woodbury and, you know, it was lovely. These guys were very nice to host. I don't know. There were like 8 USC incoming students, which was cool. But to me, that's my kryptonite. So D in Maplewood says anywhere along the 494. Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. For Maplewood. Yeah. Apple Valley, someone says. The roadway system is terrible. Apple Valley, what's frustrating about Apple Valley is you're coming down 77,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden it's like the crazy names of the streets. You're on like Johnny Cake Road and Applejack Crack-a-Lack Drive or whatever, and you're like, what is happening here? But it's Stoplight City. You're like, what happened? Apple Valley. It was going so good. I'm on 77 and I'm having a great time.
Yeah.
I'm almost to the zoo. And then.
Wait a minute.
Then it's Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Or Raising Cane's on the corner there. And off you go. That's my. Lakeville, says the texter. It's so far. Oh.
It's out there.
So we used to have friends who lived. So we had friends who lived in Eagan and friends who lived in Rosemount. And Rosemount from Maple Grove, you're going to need to pack a lunch and a snack. It is a long drive. It is funny. You're like, when you, someone from Lakeville is saying Maple Grove. Fair. Well, yeah.
You know, that's not wrong.
So at this gathering, there were, there was a family from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Because I was trying to figure out, I'm like, well, who came the furthest to this thing? And I think Eau Claire and me, we were tied. Because I think Eau Claire to Woodbury is probably also 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's about that. Because it's, you know, when I was going to school in Eau Claire, it was 90 minutes from Maple Grove-ish. So, yeah.
That's very.
Mine is Forest Lake.
Oh.
My best friend in the world.
Yeah.
When he and his wife built their quote unquote dream house to do it on a budget, they built out in Forest Lake. It's where they could get the most house for the budget that they
sure,
had.
Sure.
Which is fine. But that's, you know, a solid 40-45 minute drive for me when I want to go out there and visit. And it just makes way more sense for me to go out there than it is for them to come down here. Just, again, family stuff and whatever. But now, especially this summer, when you're going up 35 and you want to take the exit that would go to their house, that exit's shut down because they're doing road work and you can't get there from here. So now you've got to go up and then into like a, you know, downtown Forest Lake area and loop around and come back. And there's three or four roundabouts to get there. And it's just...
Well, you have this moment where you're like, do I value this friendship this much?
I've asked that question. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
My friends who lived in Eagan moved to St. Paul. That was a considerable upgrade. Because you felt like, so you had to think about, like, oh, I better not drink too much.
Right.
When you're hanging out, you're like, this is very far. And you'd consider, like, do I want to spend the night? And it's always a one-way street. Nah, that's the other issue. These friendships, how often does Forest Lake come to you?
Oh, and almost never.
Zero.
Almost never.
Yeah, Eagan never came to us either. Rosemount, they never came to us. Maybe I'm just a crappy friend. No one wants to come and visit me.
Yeah, that's not my problem.
Can't rule it out for me. Jeff is on the line. Jeff, what city is your kryptonite?
The entire Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area.
Yeah, well, you're from far. You know,
not that far, 60 miles.
You know, Wade Park is my kryptonite. Who wants to go there?
I thought you maybe wanted to hear my top 10.
Let's hear it. Hit it.
Okay. I-94, 494, 694, 35E, 35W. That's five.
Yeah.
Parking. That's eight.
That is fair. That is fair.
I forgot the other two.
Very good. Thank you, Jeff. This texter lives in Stacy and says Shakopee. St. Louis Park, because 394 for the East Metro. Oh, so if you're in the East Metro, yeah.
Yeah, that whole...
That is bad.
The exchange between 94 and 394 was about as poorly thought out as any exchange you'll ever find. So
my in-laws live in Plymouth. And they go to Roseville to go see Dr. Turin.
Ah.
And so they were over at our house on Sunday. I was giving them alternate routes instead of taking.
Yeah.
But they also have doctor's appointments they go to in St. Paul.
Because it's really, you know, the texter talks about coming from the east, going to the west. But going west to east is no
worse.
Picnic either.
Worse. Let's break. What am I doing? I'm just so many texts. Part of the complaints is about the construction. It's part of the issue out there. For sure, for so many of us right now. And one of the suggestions, in fact, this morning on Vanita's show, Andy Brehm was talking about, why don't construction workers work 24 hours? Why not work at night? Not work 24 hours, but have the project going 24 hours long. Interesting reason that I had not considered why we maybe shouldn't do that. We'll talk about it next. Well, it's probably the number one question that people bring up in their frustration about the multiple road construction projects going on at the same time. We love and hate road construction, right? We want the progress. We want the roads to be safe. We want the bridges to be safe. But we would like it to be done in about 10 minutes. If you can, or at least like not have all these projects going on at the same time. One of the potential solutions that people bring up is, why aren't we working around the clock? And there are... good answers. Well, we'll see. You decide if you think they're good answers or not. Tim Werke is the CEO of Associated General Contractors of Minnesota, the Commercial Construction Trade Association. Tim is with us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Thanks for being here, Tim.
Well, thank you, Jason. Thanks for having me. I'm appreciative of being able to be here and talk with you.
Well, I am so appreciative of all of your members who are out there working hard. And frankly, based on the way that so many people are driving today, you know, these women and men are putting their own safety on the line to try to make our roads safer. That is my number one reason why I think, gosh, I don't know if I want people working in the middle of the night. I worry about safety.
Yeah, so do we. It's a constant challenge, and It's had impacts in the industry, everything from trying to recruit and find people to work in this industry to physical safety and now mental health and dealing with chronic crisis in the industry, dealing with suicide in construction. But
yeah, and Tim, yeah, that's a part of this that I had never considered, and I'm really glad that you're talking about this, because I think today a lot of us have a better handle on how mental health impacts certain professions. And construction is not one that I necessarily would have thought of as having a higher suicide rate, but the Centers for Disease Control says it's about 75% higher than men in the general population. What do you think that's very disturbing?
Well, it is. And, you know, there's so many angles to this, Jason. It's a cultural, has roots in the culture of construction, you know, hardworking, hard charging men and women. But it also has factors that relate to, you know, how work is performed and the demands that are placed on these men and women that, as you mentioned here, put themselves in harm's way. And, you know, I always like to go down a list of things that are common in this industry and then finish by asking, does anyone want to sign up for a career in construction? And you can start with, you know, that it's you're working out in the elements, whether it's cold weather, rainy weather, broiling hot weather. You're in a physical environment. It's a very physically demanding occupation. Travel is involved. You're away from your family for long periods of time. And it's seasonal. People in this market, where we can't necessarily perform road work all year round,
sure.
We ask folks to try to get the work done in 8 months, and then try to spread 12 months of pay over 8 months. And so there's lots of demands on men and women in the construction industry that result in stressors that manifest in mental health concerns. So.
Yeah. It makes sense when you think about it, just the demands mentally, emotionally, the financial demands, like you said, of trying to make a year's worth of pay in 8 months, all of those things adding up. But the numbers are astonishing, I think. And you when you look at the death rate, you have, you know, what, like five times the number of construction workers who are dying by suicide as compared to a work-related injury or some sort of accident. And that is, you know, that's something we have to think about, I think, when we're saying, like, well, why can't they work around the clock? That is a factor.
And that's what we're trying to bring to attention here. And then we're also trying to work within our industry and in our partners, being the project owners, to try to find, can we do some things differently and still meet the public's expectation in terms of getting projects completed in timely manner and fashion. But what we're talking about wanting to do is exactly what you framed there, that, you know, we have changed the culture in construction from 60 to 80 years ago, when a death in construction was just considered part of the job. It was a risky, high-risk environment, and men and women were killed in construction on a regular basis. And until finally we said, no, we can do some things in this industry differently. We can invest in physical safety and make men and women more safe so that they can go home to their families after a day's work. And what we're trying to do now is talk about mental health in that same way. How can we look at the industry differently from a mental health standpoint, and how can we invest? Are there things we can invest in that can bring about a more healthy environment that benefits everybody and starts to chip away at that crisis in suicide?
Tim Werke is the CEO of Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. We're talking about road construction, talking about different ways to get it done. And part of what I think about, Tim, is just the number of people working in construction. We see sort of a labor shortage in so many different industries in Minnesota right now. What is the status of the workforce, and what's the outlook for the future when it comes to construction?
Yeah, that is a really good question there, Jason. It is, we benefit in this market from one of the most highly skilled and highly productive workforces of anywhere in the country. But finding the next generation of workers is an important and also almost an insurmountable obstacle for us. Everyone is looking for people. All sectors of the economy are trying to find people to work for them. And construction is got a host of these challenges that I framed up previously that make it a difficult career choice for people. I mean, you think about precision manufacturing or retail or some of these other occupations where it's a predictable job. You got predictable hours. You get to go home at night. No one is presenting any kind of physical risk to you in the work. But in construction, those are daily stressors. And so it takes almost a unique person that wants to be involved in this industry in order to make a career out of that. And we spend a lot of time looking at that and putting yourself on the roadway day after day in harm's way. And now saying, and to address your issue about 24-hour-a-day work, who wants to go out on a roadway, you know, at 2 in the morning and put yourself at further risk when, you know, we know there are folks on the roadway at that time of the night that probably shouldn't be on the roadway, that bring a physical risk to the job, maybe by being under the influence, maybe by being sleep-deprived, all those kinds of things. And we also find if you look at productivity studies that working beyond that 10 to 12 hour continuous time period, your productivity falls off markedly. Your attention to safety and the safety of others starts to fall off markedly. Certainly you can double shift work and bring in a whole new batch of folks to do that work beyond that 12 hour period. But yet at the same time, you know, it's shift work. Do people want to work in the night like that? It adds cost, it's a challenge of many in the construction sector.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, you also have the fact that, you know, people live near these roads and bridges. And
oh, absolutely.
You know, people don't like the noise either. So you got to weigh that concern as part of this. I wonder sometimes, Tim, we got to witness a true marvel of construction work, of engineering, of rapid government engagement when we saw the 35W bridge rebuilt. And at the time, I wondered, man, I wonder if this is going to get people the wrong idea that all of these projects could be done this quickly.
Yeah.
And maybe they could be done more quickly if we were willing to just straight up shut down. You know, when the bridge was collapsed, you just had a shut down available to work in area. I suppose you would have to do that with every project. If you straight up close 394, maybe you could get it done fast, you know.
And that would be, you know, there's so many different factors that weigh into that decision. What you've hit on, though, is probably the most efficient way to deliver a construction project is to shut it down and have it be unimpeded by having to accommodate traffic, because now you're not paying for temporary structures, temporary bypasses. All of those things that are invested costs that actually get torn out when the project is completed. But then beyond that, you have to balance and weigh the impact to businesses. And, you know, think of the hundreds, if not thousands, of businesses like an I-394 would be affected if you simply close down the job end to end. And then you have to have an alternative route
right.
that makes sense.
Right.
In my history in this industry of 30-plus years, I've seen that happen at one time where MnDOT closed Highway 36 in North St. Paul and had to work closely with the local businesses in the community, had to have an identifiable, functional alternate route, and then put the contractor at risk to say, get in there, get it done, and get out. We'll suffer the immediate pain, of having that road closed for the amount of time it takes to get it done. But if you, contractor, don't complete it on time, then you start to pay these, what they call liquidated damages or penalties,
right,
at the end of the project. But that doesn't lend itself to every project.
Nope, you got to think about the businesses around there. You got to think about the residents who live. It's a difficult scenario. I'm glad that you were able to take a little time to us. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Jason.
Do you think we took it too far with a Coldplay couple? Is this what we call them now, you think? The Coldplay couple? Everyone knows. I have never seen one story take over the internet like this. And I have so many different thoughts about this, and I'm sure you do too. The CEO who was caught with his director of people, she knows people. He knows people. He stepped down.
And apparently they know each other.
Yeah. So having an affair, I think, generally is, none of my business. I don't recommend it. I'm not pro. But also, shouldn't lose your job for this, I think. In this case, though, I just want to thank this couple. Because they have accomplished what no one else could accomplish. They've brought us together. They brought us together in a moment of mockery. We have gotten to make fun of people. Yeah, cost him his marriage, probably cost her. But like Republicans and Democrats coming together on the social, it's been so much fun.